Sermons from the Journey is an audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Rebecca Clark, pastor at Trinity United Methodist Church, Montpelier, Vermont, and blogging online at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
In parenting books and strategies, they tell you to give children choices. Two choices that are equally amenable to you, so that the child can choose between these choices and feel empowered by making his or her own choice, but still ends up doing what you want them to do. So, you know, choices like you may eat your broccoli or your green beans, either one being perfectly fine. Or you can brush your teeth first and then put on your pajamas to get ready for bed, or you can put your pajamas on first and then brush your teeth, but either gets the child ready for bed. In practice, however, I've noticed it doesn't always work that way. Or as one of my friends on Facebook put it, her son likes to regularly choose secret option C, which was not presented. And goes something like, no, I don't think I'll eat the broccoli or the green beans, but I'd like that cookie over there. Or I think I'll try to brush my teeth and put on my pajamas at the same time so that then I have time to try to play a video game or do something else that wasn't on the agenda after that. We are pretty creative, open-minded people most of the time, especially as children, but we are pretty creative, open-minded people, and we often see more than the choices, the one or two choices put before us. Now, when it comes to the observance of the law and how to deal justly with one another, the code that we call the Levitical code quite often, the law that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai and instructed the people with and all that, we think of and we hear as an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and oh, isn't that horrible, this retribution, this retaliation, this tit for tat against somebody who has harmed you. But actually, at the time, it was meant to be a voice of restraint, because at the time that law was given to the people of Israel, if someone poked out your eye, you could do pretty much anything you wanted to them. If somebody hurt one hand, you could beat up their whole body if you wanted to. If somebody stole one item from you, you could steal a whole bunch of stuff from them. I mean, you could just take the retaliation up a notch again and again and again, so that neighbors were literally at war with one another sometimes over what had begun as a small infraction and grew and grew and grew as each tried to harm the other more and more. Sometimes this still happens today. But we try not to do that. But the word that God gave to Moses and Moses gave to the people was when somebody hurts your eye, you may only hurt their eye. And if someone injures your hand, you may only injure their hand. If someone knocks out one of your teeth, you may only knock out one of theirs. It was not meant to say that it's okay to be violent. It was meant to say, keep your violence to the same level that theirs was at. Let the punishment fit the crime, in a sense. But do not go beyond in seeking retaliation and retribution and vengeance for what's been done to you. Let God deal with the vengeance part. We remember that kind of phrase, right? Deal justly with one another and don't escalate the conflict between your enemies. Right? So it was presented as a kind of calming baseline. Now we don't hear it as that, but at the time it was presented as a lessening, a de-escalation, so that we would only harm one another as we had been injured. But Jesus takes this to a different level, and he says, you know, that is not good enough. It's just not good enough to respond with the same level of violence with which we have been met. We cannot keep this cycle going. And we often hear Jesus' words about, you know, I say to you, if somebody hits you, that you should let them hit you again, as so far in the other direction. Like what he is saying is in a sense almost a sick permission giving for violence against ourselves. And what we're missing is that his recommendation, his command, really, is actually a secret option C. It is not violence, but it is also not passivity. It is something in between the two. It is what we like to call the third way. It is a choice that we can make that is in between violence and passivity. Jesus' secret choice C is compassionate. More compassionate than just leaving some extra food in the field for a neighbor or a poor person to gather as they needed it, but giving to everyone who asks as often as we can so that we can be beyond the call of ordinary compassion. But Jesus' secret choice C goes further than that. Jesus' secret choice C is creative. In a context that we might not understand quite so well, a person who was delinquent in their debt and their responsibilities could be brought to court and could be sued for literally the clothes off their back. Not all of their clothes off their back, just their coat, their outer garment, and they could be sued for that. And Jesus says, when somebody sues you for your outer coat, go ahead, take it off and give it to them. And then give them your inner garment too. Which would essentially mean that the person's now standing naked in court, largely. And this is taboo. This is not permitted in Jewish culture, but it's not actually taboo so much for the person who is naked as for the one who was so rude as to cause the nakedness. So in a sense, what Jesus is saying is when somebody has come to take what is yours away, go ahead, but let them see the brokenness, the dishonor in that by giving even more than they have asked, than they have required of you, by taking your inner garment off as well, so that we can see how broken we are when we take from one another in that way. It's a creative way of dealing with this. It is also, Jesus' secret option C, is also courageous. I might even say, at the risk of being punny, it is cheeky. When he asks his disciples, when he tells his disciples to turn the other cheek. And here I need a volunteer who's always wanted to pretend they were hitting a pastor. Oh, that's so nice of you. Nobody raised their hand.
You used the word pretend.
I used the word pretend. I want to say that I bet Benji's very sad that he's missing this sermon right now. I need a volunteer. All right, come on up, Joe. All right. Now, there's a very important thing about first century Jewish culture, and that is that you only ever hit someone with your right hand. Okay? It doesn't matter if you're right or left-handed. You're only ever going to hit someone with the right hand. Okay? So now, please don't hit me. But here's my right cheek. All right? If you were going to hit me with your right hand on my right cheek, how would you have to do it? Right. And that was close. You'd have to backhand me, right? You'd have to cuff the person with a demeaning backhanded slap, right?
Right.
This is the way that you would slap a slave. This is the way somebody abusive would slap a person they were abusing, right?
Right.
If I turn and offer the left cheek, and you're still going to use your right hand, again, please don't hit me, but how would you have to hit me? Aha, that way. Thank you very much. You can go back to your seat. When you turn and offer the left cheek, the person is forced to meet you as an equal. In saying, when a person strikes you on your left cheek, when a person not only inflicts violence upon you, but demeans you, degrades you, turn and offer them your left. Say to them, you can hurt me, you can hit me, but you cannot take away my humanity. You must see me as a human, as a person, as an equal. If you are to inflict violence upon me, you can take, you know, you can give pain, but you cannot take my dignity. That's courageous. That's cheeky. That's powerful, what Jesus is calling and telling people to do. Equally courageous and cheeky, the injunction to walk a second mile comes from a law that stated that a Roman officer could demand that one of the Jewish subjects that they were occupying carry his gear for a mile. And that's where we see this very provocative image that I found on the internet here. But, I think we miss sometimes. We are talking about an enemy. We are talking about a person who has oppressed and injured and murdered the people of Israel. And they could turn to those people of Israel and say, this is my gear and I'm going that way and you need to carry it for me for a mile. And Jesus says, when a person makes you do that, makes you walk a mile with them, do it. And then walk with them a second mile. Go further than you are required to go. And why would you do that? Why would you possibly go with a Roman occupying soldier longer than the prescribed mile? And as we see in this image, which is by Michael Belk, it's called The Second Mile. And here Jesus is talking with the soldier whose gear he's carrying, and as you might not be able to see in the back, but this soldier is dressed as a Nazi soldier. And Jesus is carrying not only his gear, but his weapon, which is a disconcerting image, to say the least, a challenging image. But we imagine, at least I do when I look at this picture, that Jesus has continued walking with this person because he has begun to have a conversation. He's begun to see this person as a human being, which is something that is hard for me to see, I'll admit. You know, a Roman soldier is so far out of our context and out of our experience that we might be able to kind of imagine that. But a Nazi soldier really drives home the power of what Christ is saying here. Which brings us to our last, and thanks, Vicky. We'll go back to a less disconcerting image for a moment. To kind of the last piece, which is that what Christ is calling us to do, this secret option C, is very challenging. It is incredibly difficult. We're not talking about some sort of easy or vague forgiveness. We're not talking about just sort of, you know, being clever and standing up to somebody. We're talking about letting go of the pain and the anger and the injury, the wrong that has legitimately been done to us. I mean, he's talking to people who do get sued for their clothing, who do get struck as slaves and people who are less than human. He's talking to people who are occupied by a foreign and oppressive military force. And he is saying in all of these cases, not only let that happen, but let that happen in a way that reveals your humanity and that seeks their humanity. Let that happen in a way that allows for, that invites forgiveness. Because finally, ultimately, secret choice C is Christ-like. A Christ who died and still won. A Christ who forgave even those who were his murderers. He teaches us to never let go of who we are as God's children. A lot of what I've shared from you has come from a really great summary in a book called Jesus for President by Shane Claiborne and Chris Haw. And they kind of sum up the discussion about these examples and write, also kind of paraphrasing from Walter Wink here. In each of these instances, Jesus taught a third way. Here we see a Jesus who abhors both passivity and violence, who carves out a third way that is neither submission nor assault, neither fight nor flight. But all of this makes sense only if you realize that Jesus isn't talking about the best ways to successfully win the age-old battle to restrain evil. Jesus redirects this urge by saying, do not resist an evil person. He has an entirely different way of viewing evil. This third way teaches that evil cannot be opposed without being mirrored. Evil can be opposed without being mirrored. Oppressors can be resisted without being emulated. Enemies can be neutralized without being destroyed. We need more of the prophetic imagination that can interrupt violence and oppression. If the people of God were to transform the world through fascination, these amazing teachings had to work at the center of a peculiar people. Then we can look into the eyes of a centurion or a Nazi soldier and see not a beast but a child of God, and then walk with that child a couple of miles. Look into the eyes of tax collectors as they sue you in court and see their poverty and give them your coat. Look into the eyes of the ones who are hardest for you to like, and see the one you love. For God loves good and bad people, Even God doesn't grasp for the knowledge of good and evil, but instead sends rain to water the fields of both the just and the unjust. And they conclude by saying, that's why enemy love is the only thing that Jesus says makes a person like God perfect. Christ's option C, or third way, teaches us to hold on to our humanity and the humanity of those who oppose us, who hurt us, who threaten us, who seek to destroy us, to never stoop to their level, but instead to try to elevate them not only to our level, but to God's level. And this radical love and forgiveness of even and especially the enemy brings us toward God's perfect love, that we may seek to be made perfect in that love. Amen.